Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Lawrence Hoffman, also known as Larry Hoffman, and he is a CPA, a CFF, a CVA, a CFE, meaning he's going to tell us all about what all those designations mean, and he is with RAFA PC, Senior Partner, Director of Forensic Consulting, and an audit partner from 2008 to the present. He is also really what I would call an expert in forensic accounting. Larry, you're from this area originally or no?
No. I was actually born in the Midwest in Ohio and moved here when I was 13 years old, 1967. So I just dated myself.
Oops. You just told everybody how old you are. Where did you grow up in Ohio?
I was born in a lovely town called Youngstown, Ohio.
Sure.
And spent 4 years in Cleveland.
And then came to Potomac because that's, I know you from all the way back. All the way back in that time frame. And what brought your family to D.C.?
My father was actually also a CPA.
Mm-hmm.
He had his own practice when we grew up in Youngstown, Ohio. And then long story as to why we left Youngstown, but I won't bore you with that. But one thing led to another. He got went with a large international accounting firm down here in Washington. It was now called KPMG, one of the big four.
Used to be called Pete Morwick.
Pete Mark. Actually, it even goes back. It was split into two firms. It was called Pete Mark and Mitchell and
right.
Pete Mark and Livingston.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah. I remember that. Boy, I'm dating myself.
There you go.
And he ended his career as an inspector general for the FDIC. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, Dad was one of these government accounting gurus, and he got a presidential appointee position then as the IG. He was actually when the Inspector General Act came out. He was the first appointed inspector general under the act, so he has his badge as the number one IG on it.
Neat. Yeah. So you've been here since 67. That means you've seen a lot of change in the D.C. area.
Oh, it's been incredible. I remember seeing cows grazing in Tyson's Corner off the Beltway.
Montgomery Mall, too. I remember that.
Remember when Montgomery Mall was built?
Yep.
In fact, we lived in the poor section of Potomac, so... The closest place to get a gallon of milk was either down in the town there, Potomac, or there was a place, a 7-Eleven over in Rockville next to the Putt-Putt.
I remember that.
Those are the two closest places.
So when did you start your own business?
I started my own firm in 1982. I came out of school in 1976 out of Mount St. Mary's up in Emmitsburg.
Right.
And began working with Coopers & Lybrand, which was one of the big eight firms back then.
Right.
Now it's called PwC.
Right.
And I quickly rose up the ranks. And in 1982, I started seeing a lot of changes in the profession, things I didn't really care for and like to see. And I also had this thing called this entrepreneurial bug that was always kind of settling in me. And so I went home one day and told my wife and had two kids, and I was going to go out and start my own practice, following Dad's footsteps.
Sure.
And I didn't have any business. So I said, we're going to end up eating a lot of tube steaks and drinking Kool-Aid for a while. You know what tube steaks are.
Yeah, I do.
But it was turned out real well. Hit the right place at the right time. I started with myself and a secretary in Fairfax City, Virginia. I should back up. I ended up moving to Virginia from Maryland when I got married because I just thought that Montgomery County was just way too congested.
Yeah, yeah.
So I moved over to Virginia, and now we know the rest of the story, but we know what
it's
like.
So how big did your firm get?
Well, in 7 years, we grew to 80 people.
Wow. That's tremendous growth.
It was, and like I said, we were one of those first-generation firms that were founded by former Big Four. So we brought the quality, but without the price.
And
that was a good combination.
I was there, too. I understand what that means. And the price can get out of sight. It really can skyrocket out of sight. What were the specialty areas that you had in your firm?
Well, initially, I did relatives' tax returns and reconcile their bank statements if they'd pay me. But one thing led to another, and I actually grew two specialty practices over the years that we ended up with. One in this forensic accounting area, and the other in the corporate finance and emerging businesses area.
Okay. Tell me about forensic accounting. What does that mean? What do you do as a forensic accountant?
Well, the forensic accounting field actually comprises of four different service areas. We do the typical, which everybody associates forensic with fraud.
Okay.
So we do fraud investigations and prevention work.
All right. So you're looking for fraud. People are hiring you to come in and really scour the books and records.
Well, in most cases, they've already been hit.
Oh.
They're already a victim
Too
of
late.
Fraud. It's kind of always after the fact.
So you're just proving it.
We're going in there and proving the damages, finding out how much was taken, what was the scheme, and then what they want to do once they have that information, if they want to go with a criminal referral or civil case, or in some cases, unfortunately, they do nothing, and the perpetrator just moves on to their next victim.
Ooh. Does that happen a lot? Do you see that happen a lot?
Yes, unfortunately.
So people just don't want to deal with it. They got rid of the person, and that's enough for them, and they'll move on.
Well, in a lot of cases, and particularly the nonprofit sector, which I deal with a lot with, they don't want the publicity.
Right.
They don't want to be in the news that they got defrauded by somebody that took resources from the organization, because they feel like, we're not worthy of donations then, and people will be scrutinizing us more.
But don't they have a disclosure obligation with the Internal Revenue Service, and can't people see it from the 990s and other things that they're filing?
Well, that's an interesting point you raise there. When the IRS changed the forms on the 990 about 5 years ago,
right.
There's now a question on there if you've been a victim of an internal fraud. And if you have, then you need to check that box and say what it was and quantify it.
Right.
I did get a call recently from a client of mine who was a victim of a fraud, who got a call from the Washington Post and wanted to know about this fraud. And they couldn't figure out how they got this information, and finally figured out. And the Washington Post said, well, we pulled your 990 and found it on there. So the Washington Post is over there pulling 990s and looking for stories on this.
And you have to keep your 990 publicly displayed.
That's correct.
As a 501c3 organization, for sure. Now, tell me about the other side of the business that you created. You created also the corporate finance and private equity business.
We were working with a lot of emerging businesses. Worked with companies that started from business plan and scratch all the way to public offerings. And one thing led to another there, and ended up actually forming our own investment bank.
Wow.
Back then, an NASD investment bank. Now it's called FINRA,
uh-huh.
As we know. That also resulted in developing and raising capital through two private equity funds. So we were investing in companies at the same time. So that it became quite exciting, and so we weren't only just doing traditional accounting, tax, and auditing work. We had developed quite a practice in working with these emerging companies.
And what happened to the business? You ended up, you're now with RAFA, so how did you transition from having that big of a firm and then how did you end up with RAFA?
Well, that sector of the business really took off, and as everybody recalls, back in the early 2000s, Arthur Andersen had a tremendous scandal with the Enron situation.
I started my career there, so.
Oh, okay.
Great. It was a great firm. It really was, especially in Washington. It was a wonderful, wonderful firm.
It was a good firm here. So the accounting profession changed fairly dramatically then, and it became very difficult. We were setting up Chinese walls between companies trying to do different services, and it just became very difficult. So that because of the change in the profession, I decided that time to spin out the forensic practice and the corporate finance practice, and I sold my interest to my other partners in what I call the traditional practice areas, and then I took those businesses, and I had worked those businesses from 2002 to 2008 fairly extensively, doing a lot of different transactions, quite frankly, all over the world.
Wow. And then how'd you end up with RAFA? And tell us a little bit about RAFA.
Well, when the economic collapse came in late 2007, 2008, it just became very difficult out there to do business in that sector. So, and I promised my wife, because I was just working myself to death, that I would kind of start to wind down and, and do something and try to enjoy life more with her. And she's my best friend, so I owe that to her. So I was looking, and a good friend of mine, Tom Raffa, who I've known for many, many years. Matter of fact, Tom and I started at Coopers and Libran together, right, out of school, knew each other since then. He left 2 years after I did and started his firm,
right,
Raffa PC. They were experiencing tremendous hypergrowth in the Washington area here, and one thing led to another. They didn't have a forensic practice, and I said, well, it'd be nice just to be part of something as opposed to always having to own the company and deal with it from an owner standpoint. So I merged my practice in 2008 with Tom's practice and became a partner there and have been practicing in this area since then.
Are you still really focusing on the forensic accounting side of things?
Yes, I've been developing that practice there, and it's been coming along quite nicely. It's been a great experience.
Who are your primary customers? Who do you deal with mostly? Who refers you your business? How do you get your business?
Well, talking about the forensic practice again, we mentioned one aspect, which was the fraud.
Right. You said that there were four different components.
There's four components. There's the fraud. There's what we call the litigation support work, where, okay, I serve as an expert witness in litigation matters.
So lawyers, obviously.
Yeah. So I deal all the time with lawyers. And there, as we know, there's plenty of those in town. And so that's a big audience there. I do a lot of valuation work, business valuations, and that runs the gamut from M&A work to tax-related estate gift type situations. And then the last area is in the insolvency and reorganization area, where, okay, you have troubled businesses. All four of those really come under the forensic accounting umbrella.
What's been the biggest challenge that you've faced in growing your business?
The biggest challenge I've found is the amount of knowledge you have to have. I mean, the technical knowledge just continues to grow. There's a lot of regulations all the time. Different things changing continuously with the courts. I tell my partners, they don't sometimes understand this or realize it, but I probably spend at least 6 hours a week just studying updates and reading and being current on what I need to be current on.
To do what you have to do, you have to. You have to read. I mean, I do the same thing. At a minimum, it's more like 10 to 12 hours for me, but it's at a minimum, you have to constantly keep on top of what you're doing. And so, you know, there's a lot of technical challenges, I guess, that you face as a business owner, particularly in doing forensic accounting. Who was your mentor? Who did you turn to in helping you grow your business, transition it, and today? Who is your mentor?
My mentor is my dad.
Oh, that's neat.
I followed in his footsteps as a CPA. He is 84 years old today. He's in great health, great mental health, physical health, and he's been my mentor in my life, and besides my wife, my second best friend, mm-hmm, if you want to call it that.
That's neat. And so how has the mentor helped you? How has it been valuable to you?
Well, having somebody in the business who's been through the business in a lot of different aspects, having his own practice, working for large firms, government, different aspects, kept me from making a lot of mistakes, but it still didn't stop me from making mistakes, so I just still made mistakes. And what was nice about having your dad as your mentor is when you did make mistakes, it was great to have him there because he was very encouraging.
Well, with a minute left, what words of advice would you give to the listeners who are interested in starting their own new business?
Well, having started my own businesses and dealing with a lot of startup businesses over my career, I think there's a number of things that I would encourage people. I think the most important one that I've found is to stay focused. Don't get distracted and doing a lot of non-productive stuff. I categorize things in what I call my high payoff activities. And there's really only five of those that I have. And I look at my calendar all the time and say, you know, are those in my calendar? Or are there other stuff fulfilling that just doesn't lend to what I'm about to do?
So stay focused.
Stay focused. I mean, it's a tough thing to start a business and develop it today.
Larry Hoffman, how do people get in touch with you if they want to find out more about you and your business at RAFA?
Well, my phone number is 202-955-5408, or you can email me at the initial L as in Larry, Hoffman, H-O-F-F-M-A-N, at RAFA, RAFFA.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.